now, without further delay, I'm so very excited to introduce our panelists today. We have a pretty excellent panel, I have to say. Sitting here right to my right is Ehsan Mirza. Ehsan is an associate with Macmillan LLP. He is an alumnus from Osgoode Hall Law School. Next to Ehsan, we have Yolan Williams. Yolan is a senior financial services representative from CIBC Securities. And she's also a York University graduate for public policy and management. Next to Yolan, we have Randy Williamson. Randy is a strategic decisions advisor and partner at Aird and Burliss LLP. He's also an Osgoode Hall Law School alumnus. And next to Randy, we have Harb Kalon. Harb is a business analyst with Scotiabank, and he also graduated here from with a Bachelor of Arts as well as an MBA from Schuler. So welcome all of you. We're so thankful that you're here today. So I'd like to start with the first question, and we'd like to ask each panelist to take a few minutes to briefly describe your role, your current role in your organization, and tell us a little bit about your organization. So Ehsan, do you want to start?
Sure. First of all, I would like to thank you for inviting me. I'm really excited to be here. It's a pleasure to be talking to all of you about what I do and where I work, and Macmillan specifically. I hope everyone can hear me. So in terms of my current role, I'm an associate lawyer, which basically means I started with Macmillan during my second year at Osgoode as a summer student. I went back to do my articles, which is similar to, I guess, residency in medical school for 1 year, and then I became an associate last year, and I just recently became a second year associate. I practice in the financial services group, which is banking, so Macmillan represents a lot of the big banks, some of whom are, both two of whom are sitting here. And we also work for borrowers, so Bay Street generally, I guess to take a step back, generally everything on Bay Street revolves around corporate law and business, so all of our clients are large corporations, and we do all kinds of corporate work for them, from litigation all the way to mergers and acquisitions, and help them get loans. So that's the part where I come in, where I negotiate loans on behalf of either the bank or on behalf of a corporation. And that involves, if any of you has bought a house and got a mortgage, you understand how a mortgage works on a house. And so it's a similar concept, but spread out on a corporation which has millions of dollars worth of assets and has a balance sheet. So it involves a lot of sort of due diligence and that kind of work around what kind of a loan the bank can lend to a corporate enterprise. So that's the kind of work we do at a high level. What I specifically do as an associate is a lot of, there's quite a bit of drafting, a lot of negotiation. The higher the level gets, the more expertise you require. So a lot of times there'll be like a partner or a senior associate on a file. We'll do a lot of the high level sort of drafting of a term sheet and the basic terms of the contract. And then as a junior associate, I'll do some of the more detailed drafting. And also a large part of what I do as a lawyer, which was very surprising to me, is just project management, which is making sure everything happens at the right time. You'd be surprised how many, in one loan, there's hundreds of documents that are often involved. And so you're keeping track of all of those documents, making sure everyone's communicating. And as an associate, that ends up being a major part of what I do. So I think that's
great, thank you.
You're welcome.
Sure. So hello everybody. It is definitely an honor to be here. Thank you for inviting me. I do work at CIBC. I work at in a branch, so I'm sure you're aware that CIBC is a large company. But I work in a location which is at University in King. I graduated from York in 2010 with the public policy and management degree. And yes, I am in banking, which is a completely different field from which I studied, but it's been good. I started out as a CSR, which is a customer service rep with the organization, which is starting at the core. Then I went on to be a financial services representative, and now I'm a senior financial services rep. In terms of what I do, it's really just fulfilling customers' needs. So it's identifying the needs of the customers and finding the right products to actually fulfill those needs. You'll see it says securities, CIBC Securities Inc. That's only because I do sell securities, meaning investments. So after leaving here, I also did my mutual funds course, which means that's the only way I can sell securities. In a nutshell, it's really just from day-to-day banking right up to investments, mortgages, everything that that has to do with banking, that's what I do.
Great, thank you. Randy?
Thank you, Hema. My name's Randy Williamson. I am absolutely delighted to be here. This is the second time I've actually been in this room for an event like this. A few years ago, I spoke at another event like this. I, among other things, I will be working for you in a few years when you graduate from York, because among other things, I also chair the alumni board for York University. So I'm really happy to be here to look out at 30 or 40 of my fellow alums in a year or two or three's time. I work at a law firm as well. The firm I work with is called Aird & Burliss. Like Macmillan, we're a full-service business law firm. So we do most everything that a business could need in its business activities, whether it's banking services like we just heard, M&A activities, whether you're buying or selling a business, financing a new business, various joint venture arrangements, partnership arrangements, all kinds of interactions between companies and businesses. My specific role, we'll get into it in one of the subsequent questions, but my specific role is a little different than most lawyers. I have spent less than 6 or 7 years, in fact, practicing as a lawyer. I've spent most of my career in business. I've had two stints where I've been working at a law firm, but I've spent most of my career in business. So as a result, most of my activities involve providing strategic advice to various business clients of our firm. The kind of advice I typically provide is for entrepreneurial-owned businesses. I owned a series of businesses in the 90s and the last decade. So I spend most of my time helping mid-sized business owners, typically private companies, not publicly traded businesses, but private companies that are making significant strategic decisions about their business. And so I do that on behalf of the firm's clients. Most of them are clients that I tend to attract to the firm because of the circles that I tend to spend my time in. So most of my job is to help these companies think about the big issues around their business. What direction do we take it in? How do we sell it, if that's what's appropriate? How do we finance the next stage of growth? What kind of relationships should we have with our competitors or with our suppliers? How do we enter new markets? Etc. I do spend a significant bit of my time on two other specific areas. One is in the renewable energy space and the clean technology area. It's an area that I decided to focus on when I came back to Bay Street 6 or 7 years ago. And then as well, I spend a fair bit of time. Our firm has a significant interest and business dealings in India. And so I, on behalf of the firm, I spend a fair bit of my time involved in Indian matters. So that's what I do.
India.
I was in India in November last year.
Thank you. Mark?
Yeah, hi. Again, I think I echo my panelists here and thrilled to be here. I was actually just thinking the last time I was in this room, it wasn't for anything academic. It was actually a res party that we were trying to crash. And I don't remember too many details about it. Probably speaks a little bit about how the night went. But yeah, so you guys are definitely on the right path, because like I said, I never did attend any of these networking events during my undergrad. So I want to thank you guys for taking this time and let you know that you're definitely doing something right. A little bit about myself, I'm a business analyst at Scotiabank. Was called Scotia Capital before, but they did some rebranding. So basically, I mean, in very layman terms, I work in the market risk management section of the bank. So basically, the money that you guys deposit into the bank, I guess it's my job to make sure that it's secure. So when you go back to take out that cash, make sure that the bank isn't doing any funny business with your cash deposits. So the way we do that, without friends like our lawyer friends, is we make sure that the regulations, both on a provincial, OSFI, I don't know if you guys are in finance, but OSFI, Basel, These are some of the international regulators and national and provincial international regulators that kind of set a set of rules for banks and what they can do and what they can't do. And then it's our job to make sure that the bank's complying with those regulations. It's definitely a growing area in Scotia for sure, but across the financial sector, if you pay close attention to the financial sector, you'll realize that risk management compliance is definitely a growing area. I guess we could get into a little bit about my day-to-day jobs throughout the rest of the panel, but that's kind of just a high level of what it is that I do.
Thank you. So now that you've described a little bit about your current role, maybe you can think back, some of you just a few years ago, some of you a little longer. What attracted you to this field? What attracted you to this field, and how did you get your foot in the door? So Yolan, maybe we'll start with you.
Oh, sure.
Because for you, I mean, it's interesting because you were public policy and now you're in banking, so.
To be honest, Hima, I think I'm just, banking and myself were just like magnets. Ever since I left high school, back home, I actually was in the banking sector. So I've been in banking ever since for my professional life. So when I came here and I wanted to do something different, hence the reason I ended up in public policy and management. So when I came here initially, it was actually for accounting. And then I realized this is a little different from the accounting that I'm used to back home. So then I switched over and like, okay, let's try public policy and management. It looks interesting. And I enjoyed it for the time I was here. And then when I graduated, it was like, okay, what happens now? What am I going to do? So I started sending out applications, had my spreadsheets, and I was sending out applications every day. And I'm like, okay, what's happening? But then while I was at York as well, I was quite active. I was extremely active. I was the president for the International Students Association. I was also a mentor for the student ambassadors. I was also a part of the EGLP program, which is the Emerging Global Leaders Program. So I traveled while I was here as well, doing all that. So I was networking in the community. So I did get a contact through one of my networking opportunities. So I had an interview in the field in which I studied. Went for the interview. It was very good. They liked me. I liked them too. But it wasn't as corporate for me. For me, it's like, I don't know, because I've always been in the corporate industry. It just wasn't for me. So then I got a call from CIBC. Shortly after I got that interview, I got the call from CIBC as well. And I'm like, whoop, okay. Went in. You know, the first thing he said to me, you do realize that you're starting at the bottom. I'm like, yep, I'm quite fine with that because, you know what, I prefer to grow with the organization. At least I'll get to know more about the organization and at least I can spread my wings thereafter. So I'm like, I'm fine with that. So we started off there, had all my interviews, 1, 2, 3 interviews, and it was good. Went through the program and of course did started out and it went well. And I'm like, okay. Once you're in the program, so this is a 6-week program which we all have to do once you start with the organization. And I'm thinking, okay, I want to be down in the financial district. I want to be in the financial district. I don't want to be anywhere else. I'm fingers crossed. Because you don't know where you're going to be placed. And I was placed in the financial district, just as I wanted. So it worked out pretty good for me. Would I change now? I'm still thinking about that. Right now, I'm actually enjoying what I'm doing. So I think I'm good for now.
And how long would you say from when you started in that initial CSR, you called it, right?
Mm-hmm. Customer
CSR
sensor.
Position to where you got now, where you are now? How long would it to move up?
3 years ago. This year, but 3 years. I left York in 2010. So each year it was another level up, and it's just a matter of identifying the needs and ensuring that you're meeting your targets. Because one of the things with CIBC is that we all have targets. And as long as you're meeting your targets, and each year we have annual and semi-annual reviews, and it's just a matter of you ensuring that you are meeting your targets, and as long as you're exceeding and meeting your targets, then it's fine for you to move to another level. You cannot move to another level until you've completed 6 months to a year in the current position. But once you have successfully completed that role, then you can always move to the other role. And that's what I've been doing, just meeting my targets, basically, because I know exactly where it is I want to go within the organization. This is a matter of climbing the corporate ladder. So I've just been doing that, just been ensuring that I meet my targets and taking it from there.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Randy?
I'll try not to take too long because my career has been a little longer than some. And unfortunately, I've been relatively unemployable for most of my career. So I work in a law firm now, but that's after about six other careers. I came out of college at another university in Ontario, which shall remain nameless, with a business degree. But at the time, I thought I might like to go to law school. I didn't know much about it, but I thought it would be a nice liberal arts education to go to law school. And so I decided to work in business for a few years to save some money to go back to school. And so when I came out of the university I came out of, there were a number of areas to go into, but I wanted to see as many, I was keen, it was always going to be business. Business was it for me. And so my start was to, I started an accounting firm. So when I left Queens, I went to one of the accounting firms on Bay Street. So that was my first experience on Bay Street. I went to what is now Ernst & Young. No intention to get a CA, but had no knowledge that you don't have any choice but to go work in that program if you're working in an accounting firm. So I did that for 3 years and saw about 25 different businesses in a short period of time. Saved my nickels and then quit after I got my CA to go back to law school. I was living in Toronto. I grew up in Montreal, so I was only going to go to one of two law schools, either downtown or here. And I was living downtown, so I presumed I'd want to go there. And they didn't want to have anything to do with me, and thank goodness for that, because it allowed me to come up to York to go to school here. So I did my law degree here at York University, and had no intention of being a lawyer, just like I didn't intend to be an accountant. I was just going to go into business. Bay Street was never going to be a part of my life. But I was convinced to at least article, because that's what you're supposed to do, kind of like I was convinced to at least write the CA exam. So I went to a law firm in Toronto and I articled and you know, passed the bar and all the rest. And then had a great experience. It was at another one of the top firms like McMillan and ours. And was a partner there in the early 90s when I decided that I absolutely hated Bay Street. You know, you guys are all interested in going to Bay Street, and I hated it. And I couldn't wait to get out. And so I wanted to go. I'd been in professional services for 7 or 8 years and had only ever intended to be in business. And I said, what the heck am I doing on Bay Street? I want to be in business. So I quit. And I quit not knowing what I was going to do, and was very, very lucky after I quit that my biggest law client, who I'd worked very closely with, asked me to join their company. It was a very large public company that was in trouble. And so a new CEO was installed, and a new CFO, and myself, and a new president. And we basically took apart this company and put it back together. I had worked closely with it when I was a lawyer, and so was very fortunate that the CEO asked me to join. And we took a company with about 100 divisions and 13,000 employees, and we took it apart and sold off a bunch of businesses, and were left with about 20 divisions and about 3,000 employees. And that was a great, wonderful experience of learning, applying my financial background, my negotiating education as a lawyer, but applying it in a real business context. From there, after a few years of doing that, you'll find I keep quitting things, mostly because maybe I don't like being employed. So after a few years of doing that, I quit, mostly because I really wanted to be in business. I mean, the job I had at this large company was a project job, much like the project management stuff you talk about in a slightly different context. And I was really selling off businesses, buying businesses, financing businesses, but I wasn't really running the business. And I had a deep, long-held desire to run a business. So I went off on my own. I did some financial consulting to pay my mortgage and the like, and looked to buy a business. And then I was very fortunate. One of my law colleagues from when I was here at Osgoode, he knew a family friend who was looking to sell their business, and so I bought it. I bought it like an entrepreneur does. I put $100,000 in, and I signed a personal guarantee for $2 million, and I didn't have $2 million. But you do what you got to do. So I borrowed a couple million bucks and bought this company, and we built it. And spent about 2 years building that company. In the meantime, I started a second company with my partner, and then about 2 years later, I started a third company, or bought a third company, and that was quite a bit bigger. And so I sold the first company, I wound down the second company, sold it, and ran this third company for a few years until about 2004, when we had an opportunity to sell it to one of these big public companies, and we did, and I theoretically retired. And so I retired and I ran a charity. And so you can see there's no real pattern here. I ran a charity for a year. In fact, I spent a lot of time here at York because I don't know if you guys still have it on campus. Do you have the Advancing Canadian Entrepreneurship chapter? Is that still here on campus? I think it is. Anyway, I ran ACE for across the country and built it for about 9 months. Realized I really wasn't ready to be retired, so I took about a year and a half off. I was at home. I had a country home and I gardened and rode my bicycle, played a little golf, and went to the cottage and just tried to figure out life. And when I was here last time, a couple of years ago, for the Canadian Conference on Student Leadership, it took me a year and a half to come up with a 3-piece Venn diagram to figure out what my career was about and what I cared about. And after I did that, I looked at buying some other businesses and bid on a couple and didn't win the bids and wasn't upset about that. And that really got me wondering, why am I not upset about not winning the bids to buy these other businesses? And I came to realize that I didn't want to run a company. Even I'd spent my entire, teenage years and young adult life thinking I wanted to run a business. And it became clear after looking to buy some other businesses and after owning a few that I didn't really want to run a business. I like helping other people. And one of the cool things about all four of us is that on Bay Street, if you have a business inclination, there is incredible opportunities to help people. Whether it's in a financing context with your clients, whether it's to protect the interests of depositors, whether it's with the kind of businesses that or banks and borrowers your company helps, or the entrepreneurs that I help, we get to help a lot of people. That's the coolest thing about Bay Street, if you ask me. I was able to come back to Bay Street when I thought I'd never want to be there. And we'll get into it in some of the other questions that Hema and you folks may ask, because I realized what I cared about Bay Street and what was valuable to me about Bay Street and what I didn't like about Bay Street and how to separate the two. And we may get into that a little bit. And so I came back to Bay Street, and then it became a question of, okay, if I'm gonna help people, what platform from which can I help people? There's a variety of them. I could join a bank, I could join a consulting firm, I could join a private equity or a venture capital firm to invest funds. And I determined that what I really wanted to do was to build a long-term relationship where I could help people with strategic decisions and then help them execute on those strategic decisions. And management consulting, unfortunately, in my mind, didn't offer me that opportunity. Venture capital, private equity didn't offer me that opportunity. And of course, I had an experience in a law firm and was very fortunate that that a firm was prepared to accept this dappled, zigzaggy kind of career where I said, I'm not here to be a lawyer, I'm here to help people make decisions. And that's mostly what lawyers do, but in a particular context. So that's kind of how I got to where I'm doing what I'm doing now.
What's interesting about your story, and I love it, is because so many of our students that come into the Career Center think that their career path has to be very linear. They have to start here and end here. And what's great about so many of your stories is that it is zigzaggy. And in your career, I heard a lot of risk-taking, a lot of timing and happenstance and chance. And I think those are the factors that we try to tell students, allow yourself to be open to those things.
The thing I said so there was a Canadian Conference on Student Leadership, filled this room a couple of years ago I spoke at. The thing I said to them is, all you need, decisions you're making now are not for your whole life. They're directional, but they're not for your whole life. What you just gotta hope is that the decision you're making on your first career and then your next step and your next step is it's the absolute best decision you can make at that time. It isn't the best decision you're making for your life, it's the best decision you can make at that time. And that's what I've always focused on, and that's allowed me to do a whole bunch of different things that culminated in a career that I'm really enjoying.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Carl?
Yeah, I was kind of taken in by Randy's story here. That was amazing. So with me, I started my undergrad here at York. I started around the dot-com boom in 2000. I don't know how many of you remember that. So coming out of OAC back then, we had to do grade 13 after grade 12. My whole focus was IT, oh my God, I'm gonna open a startup, I'm gonna be in Silicon Valley, all these big plans and dreams. But realized that once you're in it, you hate it. And IT wasn't made for me, I hated it, didn't enjoy it. So after my first year, I dropped out and started looking around, what else is there, what other courses are there. Started, learning about Osgoode, started thinking about political science, but wasn't sure about it. So I kind of took like a mishmash of courses, some economics and poli sci, trying to figure out what it is exactly that I want. So ended up finishing my degree in political science, thinking I'm going to go to Osgoode, but ended up writing my GMAT and going to Schulich. So it kind of speaks to a little bit what Randy's saying, that everything you do is directional and it's what's the best thing for you at that time. Mm-hmm. And after realizing, after taking a couple of political science courses, not wanting to drop out or change majors again, I figured that I could finish my degree and go into business. So I guess my point here with you guys is that if you're still trying to realize what it is that you're doing and you're not sure to make that step, take that step. It's fine. Like I realized when I was in school and some of my friends was that people were scared. They're like, oh, I started in accounting, I have to finish in it, and now I have to go through and write my C's and stuff. It's very personal to you. So take those decisions, those steps. That's the biggest advice from my university experience that I could share with you. And after that, I worked for a couple of years while I wrote my GMAT. I came back, went to Schulich, did my MBA. And the funny thing about my MBA timing was I came into my undergrad during the dot-com boom and burst, but I graduated my MBA at the worst possible time imaginable. I graduated when banks were collapsing, Lehman Brothers went down, nobody was hiring, and going through my MBA, I was thinking, oh, I'm gonna be a consultant. I want to do management consulting. I want to do this. I want to do that. Nothing panned out as planned because there's external factors and external forces that kind of don't jive with what you have in planned. So you need to be agile. That was my lesson out of York. Out of Schulich. But the one thing that I always consistently did ever since my undergrad was keep track of the news. And it was kind of like what was happening and kind of keeping the loop both on a local level and an international level. And what happened with that, it made me realize towards the end of my MBA degree is that the financial regulation, the risk management sector of every bank was growing. And it was growing for a reason that Canadian banks did something that the rest of the banks around the world, especially in the States, didn't do. And everybody's kind of looking to Canada saying, hey, how come your banks weren't hit? And because of that, the main reason for that was because our banks were protected from a risk management perspective. So not knowing anything about risk prior to the crash, I started learning about it in class. Our professors were talking about it. And what I started out to do, my MBA, wasn't where I kind of ended it. And graduating, I felt like that risk management was a growing area, and that was something that would help me get employed. So that led me to my job at Scotia, and I've been here for a couple of years now. And like I said earlier, it's a growing sector, and I don't know where life's going to take me next, but that's where I am now.
Great, thank you.
So my story is also somewhat similar. I think there's a theme here. Until about 18 years old, when I was 18 or 19, I had never even contemplated, I think part of this has to do with having South Asian parents, never contemplated doing anything outside science or medicine. I did not like biology, so that took medicine out. And I had literally, it surprises me to this day, I'd never thought of anything outside of science or technology ever as a possible career option. And I'm surprised, especially given where I'm sitting now. I've finished high school with did my OACs, but ended up going to Sheridan College to do a systems analysis diploma. I did that in 2 years, and then I worked for an IT firm, which was sort of a subcontractor to IBM. So it was supposed to be a very prestigious kind of a position in Toronto, and I worked there for 6 months, and I just walked out of the job because coding, programming, and sort of drawing up these systems and stuff was just not what I had wanted to do, and I'd never thought of, you know, what the career is going to look like. I'd always had sort of a closed-ended vision of what I think I can do, and I'd never thought of other things. So I quit that job, and then I started thinking about what I wanted to do. I spoke to people. I'd never gone to any career panels or anything like that before. And I started realizing I want to have sort of build relationships, have human interaction, help people. And so that's sort of where I started thinking about going to law, going into law. The only problem with that was you need a bachelor's degree before you can go to law, and I had a college diploma. So then I went and applied to Carleton University. I did economics and political science there. This is my first experience. I hadn't even taken history in high school or anything, so I was very low on like social sciences. And I absolutely fell in love with it, and not to brag or anything, but I was shocked. I got straight A's, A pluses in political science, economics. I'd never written an essay before, and it just seemed so easy and so interesting. And,
that is bragging.
Well, the point I
justifiably.
Yeah.
The point I just wanted to make was it had never occurred to me, and I guess in terms of a lesson for anyone of you still in your undergrad would be to use those electives to go outside of your comfort zone. Don't worry so much about your GPA when you're sort of thinking about an elective and thinking you may not do too well, because maybe that elective might end up changing your life, and you may realize that that's really what you wanted to do, or that's what you're interested in, but you're sort of pigeonholing yourself into one career path. So without that experience, I'd never have realized that I had these capabilities. After that, I went to law school, and then it's a very sort of streamlined process from there to get onto Bay Street. It's not really, there's specific dates on which interviews happen, there's specific dates on which sort of offers are made and offers are accepted. You go through this process called in-house interviews, or on-campus interviews, in which in one day you interview with up to 20 firms. So in 2 days I interviewed with 40 New York and Toronto firms, and then you go to their offices and you have another interview. So it's basically very streamlined. There isn't any, I don't know if there's a lot of strategy or anything involved there. And then you get hired as a summer student. There isn't really any other sort of way to get into Bay Street as a lawyer. You kind of apprentice an article, and then if you're lucky, they hire you back as an associate. So, and that's where I am now.
That's great. Thank you. So I just have one more question before I open it up to the floor. I have lots of questions, but I'll only ask one more. It touches a little bit about what Randy was talking about, which is Bay Street. I know that in many of us have an impression of what it's like to work on Bay Street. Exciting, thrilling, that whole area. But what is it really like in your experience, and some of the things that are good and maybe not so good? So Randy, do you want to start?
Sure.
At that point?
So when I was a young lawyer and an accountant before that, you were talking earlier about the sort of effort and project management and the responsibilities you have on the matters you're working on, perhaps slightly different than the responsibilities that I would have. It's hard work. One of the things that I try and remind the people in my own firm about is that. And I say this with all respect to all four of us and our companies and firms and all the firms on Bay Street, but most of the people who are working on Bay Street, unless you're a trader of stocks or bonds, or you're selling those things, you're not taking a lot of risk. Our companies are, but we as individuals are not necessarily taking a lot of risk. And yet, at the same time, many, not everybody, but many people on Bay Street make a substantial amount of money. And that seemed more than the average Canadian. A lot, in many cases, a lot more than the average Canadian. And sometimes I'll hear people in my firm and elsewhere on Bay Street complain about how hard they have to work. And how many hours they have to work. And it's absolutely true that I'm not going to pretend that particularly in the earlier years on Bay Street, you're going to work pretty darn hard. Lots of hours in many of the companies and firms. And what I try and reflect is that, well, that's part of the bargain. If you're going to be in an endeavor that pays extremely well, that doesn't require that you take many risks, well, there's got to be some part of the equation that's going to be a little outsized. And the outsized part of the equation is you need to be available for your customers or clients, and you need to be able to respond to their needs quickly. And that means a lot of long hours, especially in the early years. So that's sometimes quite challenging and drives a lot of people off Bay Street. But if you can understand why you're there, why you're trying to help the kind of people you're trying to help, that you can get through that. I'm lucky enough that it never bothered me working long hours. It never bothered me as a younger accountant or lawyer that I was working on the weekends. I still had lots of fun, but I knew that this was part of my bargain. The other part that I find is challenging at Bay Street, and frankly what drove me off of it the first time, and the part I had to get my psyche around, is there's a feeling among some folks on Bay Street that just like, and I'm old enough to remember this, just like the old movies, that you're masters of the universe. That, you know, a lot of the deals that you might be working on, whether as an investment banker, an accountant, a lawyer, or a banker, are in the business pages, and they're multi-billion dollar companies and all of that sort of thing. And so oftentimes, the people who are supporting those transactions, supporting the needs of those businesses, think they're important too. And that by the fact they're working on these things, they're important. I try and remind myself, teachers are important. Doctors are important. Scientists are important. Criminal lawyers are important. Human rights lawyers are important. All we do is move money around. And while that is relevant, it's not that important. It's relevant and it's big and it pays well and all the rest is not that important. So my hardest part was putting in perspective what Bay Street's for. And it's to try and help these transactions occur, try and help companies make deals that employ people, that build technologies, that extend products and service offerings across the country. But it's those companies, though, in my mind at least, those entrepreneurs who are doing something very interesting. And it's the teachers and scientists and doctors and human rights lawyers that are doing stuff that really matters. Once I figured that part out and I understood where my hard work or hard effort fit within all of that, I could come back to Bay Street. But until I figured that out and I figured out why I was on Bay Street, I couldn't stand being there. Now, that may not be the message people want to hear, but whether before you get there or at some point while you're there, you've got to figure that out for yourself as to why are you here? Is it just to make a pile of money and move off to something else? That's okay. That's totally okay. And there's lots of people who do it. If it's because you like working on those high prestige deals, that's okay too. But if what you're trying, if as it sounds like to me, the folks I've heard here are trying to help people, you got to figure out where all that fits. So that was for me really, that was the hardest part for me to get through. Was where all that fit.
Makes sense. I'll let anyone else jump in.
I think Randy hit on a really good point, and I think that's his years of experience speaking. Because my first year and a half was just like adrenaline. It was like, oh my God, I'm here. I'm finally here. I'm rubbing shoulders. I'm seeing stuff that I'm working on in the newspaper. Like two of my projects were on the front page of Globe and Mail business section on a regular basis. So that kind of stuff, you get a really good kick out of it. But after a year and a half or so, I started asking these questions now. Is that why am I here? What am I doing? Is this what I want? But I guess we won't get into that stuff with you guys right now. We'll let you enjoy the thrill of getting to Bay Street. I think there's one thing that I kind of want to tie into this, and I want to make sure that I kind of make this point so that it gives you guys some purpose. Now, I have two friends that have a startup in Toronto, and they grew from four people to about 35 people now, doing really well. And I was sitting one day and having coffee with them, and I said, what is it like? What kind of people do you look for? What kind of people help make your business grow? Is it people with IT background or business background or economics background or MBAs? He said, I don't care. He said the most important thing to him was somebody that he knew that went through university. Same thing what you guys are doing. Just to know that person has this basic set of etiquette and basic set of skills that he knows that person could complete a job or do a job or add value to him. Everything else will come through in your interviews and what you're looking for, what that person is looking for. So while you're going through your undergrad process, I'm trying to understand why you want to get to Bay Street, what you want to do there, really putting emphasis on a lot of your soft skills during undergrad, because that's kind of stuff that will be at the forefront of your interview. So you'll have your formulas, your finance, your accounting stuff. That stuff is kind of a given on your resume and the fact that you've done that degree. But in that same time, focusing on a lot of those soft skills, because that's the kind of stuff that you don't put emphasis on in your undergrad, but it really comes out in your first year or two at work.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because in the career center, when we talk to employers, whether they hire interns or new grads, that's when we ask, what skills do you want your, in every field, in IT, in business, what skills should, you know, university students be attaining now? And they all say, a lot of the technical stuff you could teach them. It's the writing, the research, the critical thinking, you know, that kind of thing. So I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's something we hear all the time from employers. Yes, anyone?
Sure. Just to add on that, I think another thing that I've sort of noticed in my 2 or 3 years on Bay Street is that there is sort of a commonality, at least at a junior level, in the sort of basic how an office and a business operates, understanding, you know, what your role as a junior employee associate in a law firm or an analyst is. It's all very, very similar and very simple, and it's surprising how many people have gone through university and everything and have not sort of figured that out. Now that I'm a second year associate, I sort of review summer students who are still in university and they're spending summer working for us. And the things that you really pick up on are not, you know, can this person, you know, legally analyze this contract? I don't expect any student to do that. But it's just, do they basically get it? Do they get how a business works, what they're supposed to do, how an office operates? How do you communicate? How do you write emails? Can you write a proper sort of email that doesn't sound too formal, like a 18th century letter, or it's not like a very informal chat message, you know? It's these kind of very small things that are common across Bay Street that you just need to sort of acquire these skills regardless of where you end up. In terms of just working generally on Bay Street and as a junior associate, the hours are very, very long, and it's a very high stress environment. And that is what I've enjoyed about the job the most. I think what keeps me going is not, you know, the names of the clients I represent or the big deals that I close, but it's just everyone is very, very driven to get the deal done, get the transaction closed. Everyone is on the same page. Everyone is willing to sort of sacrifice their free time and so on. It's not a 9-to-5 job. People don't say it's 5:15, I'll get back to you tomorrow morning. People are willing to take that extra step because they really take, you know, what needs to be done is taken very seriously, and part of that is reflected in our compensation. We're getting paid so that we can drop everything and get the job done. So it's a very there's a lot of adrenaline, definitely, and it's not for everyone. I've seen some junior students who kind of realize that it's not for them, but it's a very fast-paced environment and very high stress, which some people really enjoy and thrive on, and I'm one of them up to this point. A lot of people sort of change as they mature in their jobs, but that's basically my impression of Bay Street, at least in a legal capacity and working with investment bankers and other bankers. It seems very similar, that kind of a culture.
Thank you. Yolan?
Yeah, for me, it's at first when I went there, of course, it was all about the stigma of being in the industry and being in the financial core. I didn't want to be in the boonies, as I would say, which is outside of the financial downtown. So for me, yes, at first it was all about being in financial district. Now, of course, this is highly demanding, just as the other panelists have said just now, it is highly demanding. When you talk about the hours, it's just about meeting the client's needs. So if I tell you that my days are from 8:30 to 4:30, sometimes, yes. Other times, my clients are expecting to get a response today. So, yeah, and that is what we actually try to encourage. So whatever it is, we try to ensure that we give a response before the end of day and whatever the end of day happens to be. So it is very, very demanding. I'm not going to say it is not. When it comes on to targets, our targets are really high in comparison to the rest of the district, meaning outside of the financial core. I think because we have to set a parameter for what happens outside of the financial district. So yes, the targets are extremely high, but at the end of the day, what really appeals to me, it's knowing that, of course, I don't look at my customers anymore. Yes, I like the fact it's all professionals that I'm dealing with, but now it's just ensuring that I'm meeting that need for the client. It's just looking at the client and going over the portfolio and saying, okay, how can I help you? And if I can help my customer, you know, to meet that goal that they're actually working towards, then my job is done. And just having that big wide smile on the customer's face when you realize that, okay, I helped you to fulfill this goal or to get the need that you're actually trying to fill, then my job is done. I really don't look anymore as to the fact, oh, it is in the financial district. I really don't have time. When I get into my office in the morning, I have no time to get out. I have lunch, which is just rushing into the lunchroom, have lunch, I'm back at my desk. So I don't have lunch. I don't have the time to go outside and walk around. I don't have that opportunity. But I do enjoy what I do, and I really like my clients.
Thank you. Women on Bay Street. So a student asked this last week at our law panel, and just any thoughts in your own experience. I don't expect you to speak for all women, mm-hmm. but in your experience, is there a difference? Is it harder? Is it easier for women on Bay Street? Have you experienced anything like that? Any sort of difference?
In my field, not really, because we all have the same targets. So whether you're a male or a female, it doesn't really matter. We have targets to meet, and you have to meet the target. So it doesn't really matter who the person is. So, no.
Great, thank you. Okay, so now it's your turn. If you have any questions, I just ask that you please stand up if possible and ask the question in the mic, because we do record this session and we need to capture your question on video, and it's clearer if you speak into the mic. And if you could try to make your questions broad, you will have an opportunity to ask your specific questions about your individual case during the networking portion of the event. But if you could keep it broad so that it pertains to most people in the room, that would be great. Okay, thank you.
Hi, my name is Jamie Croak. This is a question maybe more directed towards Harp, just because, or it is broad, but he mentioned it. You're saying that you ask your two friends what's most important. Do they need an IT background, business, finance? I don't have that kind of background, but you said that they're more looking for critical thinking and writing, and good at writing emails even. How do I kind of show a company that side of me, but I don't have a business background? Like, how will the company, how will I promote that in the world?
Sorry, I'm just going to repeat the question for our video and for everybody, thank you. So if I understood you correctly, how does someone who may not have the business or IT background show their other skills and qualities and break into a career on Bay Street? Did I say that correctly?
Yeah, that's correct.
That's a really good question. There's two things here that you got to consider. One is there's certain jobs that it's very clear what they want. So you want to be an investment banker or you want to be a lawyer, like you're going to need a finance degree. They might want a CFA, at least a level one. They might want a certain set of courses. They might want a certain GPA. So in that situation, there's not much you could do. And you probably don't want to focus your time and energy on those type of jobs because you're not going to pass a resume clearing stage. When we think Bay Street and we think business, there's more than the five banks and five or six big law firms. There's a lot of other businesses on Bay Street and around Bay Street. If you go up towards King West or Queen West, that's kind of where like the main Silicon Valley tech startup firms are. So in that space, and I think we're going to touch on this later, is the biggest tool you can use is networking. So if you're a good networker, you get your skills and what your value add to any company would be. If you could bring that over in an informal setting where it's not, you know, here's a job description, here's a deadline, better apply, your resume better look like this. Getting past that stage is very hard. But if you have good networking skills and it's a company which is, I guess, kind of stuff that we mentioned earlier, smaller businesses, both could be public, private, they generally networking play stronger roles there where you could present those soft skills in a different context. And spring program after that.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I was not good at when I was younger was realizing that you just got to put yourself out there. I think the networking piece is very important. I'm astounded at anything I go to, there's almost always a student section to it. And I think that most industries understand the value of getting to know the assertive students early, because they're more likely, not always, but more likely to be more successful. And so then the companies in those sectors want to meet them as early as they can. Just like you'd said earlier, when I started to be a lawyer or a law student, we didn't pick our students after their first year of law school. We picked them at articling time. Now the process has been backed up so that now we select law students a lot earlier to join law firms. And the same thing in slightly different way, the same thing happens in many different industries. I go to so many different events in so many different industry sectors, and there's always a student section. And so there's always an opportunity in almost every industry you might be interested in to participate in industry events. There's a student who I knew who went to the MBA school, and that the lower MBA school here in Toronto, and she was an intern. She was volunteering for an organization, a clean technology organization I was involved with, and she was helpful to me. I introduced her to somebody. She met somebody else, and she has a wonderful career in that sector now. There are so many opportunities, I think, for students to participate at an early stage in industry sectors you're interested in. And don't be afraid. I was always so afraid to talk to people, thinking I had to have it perfect. I'm not expecting a student to have it perfect. Why should I? And nobody is. And yet, you probably expect it of yourself, and that's probably a good thing to expect it of yourself. But you don't have to be perfect. You just have to be there. Being there is half the battle. And one thing I said I remember at York University has a spring event for some of the great graduating students called Gratitude. And one of the things that I have said, and I think we were talking about it here on the panel about writing good emails and that sort of thing. And I have to even remind some of our younger lawyers and our students, with technology the way it's been, with smartphones and our computers and always on and all the rest, we've gotten so used to, especially people of at your stage, of doing almost everything through typing, whether it's typing on your smartphone, typing on your computer, whatever it is. I have to remind some of our young lawyers, and I try and remind students, talking to people is necessary. It's really important, because the problem with these, even with an IM type communication, is it isn't the same as talking to somebody. You can't read nuance. You can't sort of, in a polite way, talk over each other and actually get to the point faster. I have to remind some of our young lawyers, don't send another email to that person, phone them up. We'll resolve the point if you phone them. And the same thing holds true in terms of using older technologies. I tell students, and this is something I'll tell every single one of you, go to Vistaprint, go to Staples, get 250 business cards or 100 business cards printed up with your name, your contact information, and be prepared to hand them out to everybody. Because people like me, I don't know how to bump my phone to somebody else's phone and get your contact information. And even if I did, it's then going to be with the 5,000 other contacts that are on here. So I'm not actually going to be able to speak to you that well. If you put a card in my hand, I'm going to write a note on the back of that card, and I'm going to say, I met this person at the Founders Assembly on January 29th or 30th, whatever day it is today, and I'm going to remember. And then when you call me up, I'm going to have pulled that up with the note that I met you that day. And I'm going to have a recollection. Maybe it'll allow me to remember your face or what you said or whatever. Business cards are surprisingly important still. And yet you'd think they're not. But as a student, there's this one student from York who I met 3 years ago at the Gratitude event. And I have met her and remembered her ever since, because she was the only student of 300 at that event who handed me a business card. And it simply said, whatever her name was, student, York University, whatever program she was in, but every time I see her, I remember her because she handed me a business card. So there's like old technology is amazing, but you have to use the right technology in the right setting. And instant technology of Blackberries and iPhones and all the rest isn't always the right technology. The phone works and business cards work.
Randy, you mentioned some of those industry events recommendations of how or where they can access some of those?
Every industry in this country, in the world, has trade associations, every one of them. So for example, I do a fair bit of work with renewable energy developers and generators here in Ontario and elsewhere. One of the industry associations, I forget what it's called, the Ontario Energy Association or Ontario Sustainable Energy, one of them, there's all kinds of them. And they have these luncheons every month. And one of the tables that is paid for by the association is a student table. And so there's always a half an hour of networking, just like we're going to have towards the end of today. There's a half an hour of networking at the beginning, and those dozen students or whoever at that table are there just like I am, just like the folks from, you know, the big energy companies are, and they, I'm delighted if a student wants to come up and ask me, what's my life like, or what am I doing, or what do I like about the industry, or whatever, and I'll remember them. You know, one of the things I tell our students and our young lawyers is, one of the other greatest things about Bay Street firms is they tend to be large, and as a result, they tend to be large, and they tend to have lots of people work for them. So they happen to have really good training and development programs within them. Like you've talked about, you get your targets, you can move to the next stage of your career within your bank. Okay. One of the things I tell our students is we have a responsibility to give you those opportunities, training, development, mentoring, all the rest, but only you own your career. So if you want your career to go the way you want it to, you have to figure out how to make it go where you want it to go. You figured out in your business, I'll meet my targets, I'll show my initiative, I'll beat my targets. The people who I work for are gonna say, I'm ready to go to the next level, whatever that is. If you're a student and you show up at an industry event, I'm gonna remember you. And so if you're interested in a sector, whether it's an IT sector, if you wanna work there, you know, in the IT sector, there's probably five geographic regional IT associations in Toronto alone that are worth knowing and going to some of their events. And almost every one of them has a student category of membership. Almost every one of them has a student opportunity to participate. You volunteer for one of those organizations, you bet the people are gonna remember you. Like, there's a million ways you can do this. And if you're nervous about putting yourself out there, that's okay. I was. It took me a long time. The only time I finally figured out how to do this was when I started a business. I had no customers and I had to get them. It's my biggest thing about trying to have these kinds of conversations is it's really not hard. It's a bit, creates a bit of stress, and you have to be prepared to live with that stress or accept that stress until you get used to it. But putting yourself out there is easy, and nobody's gonna fault you for doing it. Everybody's gonna credit you for doing it. So every sector you could want. If there's a company, frankly, if you don't even know what the sector trade association is called, find a company in that sector you like, look for its partnerships on their website or Facebook page or wherever. Look for their partnerships. I guarantee it's going to have the trade associations they're a part of. And then you can find which are the important ones. Because every industry, most industries have multiple. And so you go to a few events of all of them, and then you figure out, oh, these are the ones that really matter, and I'll spend my time there. It's hard. It's not hard. People, if I meet somebody at an event like this, and I'm not suggesting I can do this for all 40 people, if somebody sends me a LinkedIn request and I care about them because they're a York University student, well then all of a sudden they have access to my 1,500 LinkedIn associates. They know who they are. And they can say, Randy, you know, I saw that you know this person. I can't do this every day and I, you know, whatever. But I mean, if you show the initiative, people want to help you. I mean, people, as they move through their career, they want to help people who show initiative, who are at the earlier stages of their career. We want to do it.
This is where I'm going to throw in a shameless plug for the Career Center.
Exactly.
The Career Center has many different resources to assist you in both the networking portion as well as to what you were asking, the gentleman Jamie was asking, about how you market yourself and your skills. So first off, we can help you look at your resume and take the experiences you do have and market it so that, you know, it's targeted to the job or place that you want to apply. But here at the Career Center, we really try to provide you with opportunities to network. You took the first step by coming to a panel like this, but we also have the TASTE program. How many of you are familiar with TASTE? So for those of you who don't know, TASTE is an opportunity for current students to connect with York University alumni. We invite York alumni to take two current students out for coffee or lunch, and it's an opportunity for you to do an informational interview, basically to ask information about the person's career, about that field, about that sector. We also have resources on how you do an informational interview, what are the do's and don'ts, and what are the type of questions you can ask. So we really have the supports if you are looking for it. So just come, you can take a look at our website or come upstairs or talk to me after. Great, thank you. And did anyone else have another question? Do you mind asking it up to my, thank you.
After like the panel, like after like the conversation like you guys like provided, I realized that like there's a common character with four of you guys is that you guys are like very responsible and you guys have like very good work ethics. Like my question is, I know like during the time that you're working, you have a lot of time to do something like within a group or like a group project, and sometimes like we like in a real life situation we will meet a like person that less responsible or has not like good work ethic you have to work with, and sometimes people have this question, oh my god, why he or she got hired, like it's in my team, and like it, I feel like it's really frustrating to have those people in your group and it affects your pace of working. So like how do you deal with this? So like it's not like a financial like a question like regarding to Bay Street, but it just happens like every single time, like when you're, when you're encountered, right? So I'm very interested.
So if I understand your question correctly, how do the panelists deal with working in a group or with colleagues who may not be pulling their share of work or weight in that, and how do you deal with that? Is that correct?
Yeah.
So I think that's an interesting question because that'll probably be an interview question on one of the interviews you go through throughout your career. So it'd be interesting to see how they answer that. Anybody want to take that?
I think it's actually, it comes right down to being a team player at the end of the day. Speaking from my branch and my location, at the end of the day, it is our branch. So even if someone is not pulling their weight, you can't really focus on that because it's not that person that is going to be the end result. It's all of you. So even if that person is not pulling their weight, you can't sit down to say, oh, she's not pulling her weight or he's not pulling his weight, so I'm not gonna do what I have to do. At the end of the day, the numbers are reflective of the branch. It is reflective of the entire group. It's not individualistic, it is a group. So you just have to play your part, and hopefully the other person or the person who is lacking behind will realize that, okay, I need to pull up my socks. And you leave that as well to your manager. We all have our superiors. So if you see a problem, we all have our one-on-one coaching. That is one thing that we also do. So every week we have a coaching session with our seniors. So on my one-on-one, I can say to my manager, okay, I realize that, okay, I brought in 5 million this week. That person only brought in 1 million. Like, what's happening? So you can have that conversation with your manager. Your manager can take it from there on. But it's not your duty, well, it's not my duty to go to my colleague to say, oh, why aren't you pulling your slack? No. It's just for me to focus on what I need to do and the manager to pull the team together at the end of the day.
Ultimately, serving the client, right? That's the most important.
Yes, thing. At the end of the day, it's ensuring that we meet the client's needs. So whatever it is that we need to do, then we do that.
Is that you
want to say something? Yeah, I actually agree completely with Yolan. It's very similar to what I said earlier about the culture, especially on Bay Street so far that I've seen. It's just that the job has to get done. It doesn't matter who's not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
From my perspective, it's Macmillan. Macmillan has a client, and Macmillan has a responsibility to get the job done. So it doesn't matter if four of the people on the team are not, are incapacitated for some reason. There isn't a lot of, not hardworking people just because of the self-selection that goes on and how you end up on Bay Street, especially in law. Most people are very A-type kind of personalities and they really want to impress people or feel personally that they need to do a good job. So I haven't ran into that problem. Where I have ran into it is in a personal experience. I had a family emergency last year and I had to suddenly drop everything that I was doing, kind of just like a normal work day. I go home at 6, I have a lot of plans for what I need to do the next day. No one else knows what's going on my files, and all of a sudden I have a personal emergency. I couldn't go back to the office for 3 weeks. And people just stepped in and everything just kept happening. You know, very senior partners were doing, junior associate type jobs just because I wasn't there, and they were willing to step in and do what needed to be done in order to get the job done without having to, pressure me into coming into work. So it's not really the incompetence example, but if someone on your team falls off, there's always someone else who'll step in and get the job done. It's very much of a teamwork kind of a environment. And just to sort of compare that with my wife, who works in the government, we both had the same emergency, so she had a very different experience. No one was willing to, like, her work was basically on pause for 3 weeks, and when she went back, she was under pressure to get everything done, and no one was willing to stay past 5 p.m. to sort of, you know, bear some of the burden, because everyone's sort of a bureaucrat, you're just working 9 to 5, and that's it. So it's in that sense, I was very impressed with how sort of Bay Street has worked in team settings.
I guess my only advice to that would be, I guess, just being a nice person in very simple terms, because you never know when that person might be you. And, you know, in a very small, like, you know, say if you're working with financial related numbers, you know, you put a 9 instead of a 6 in a spreadsheet somewhere, and it was your spreadsheet, you sent it out, and it comes back to you. So if you're always kind of picking out stuff about other people who aren't pulling your slack, it's probably going to come back and bite you one day. So my advice would just, you know, make sure the job gets done, clients are, projects done, and those kind of things are kind of ebbs and flow of the job.
And just as a last comment, there are lots of other places in the world where those kind of people can hang around a long time. Perhaps in the government, I won't make a comment. But Bay Street is a highly self-motivated environment. And beyond it being highly self-motivated, so the number of slackers tend to be fewer. The other piece is what goes along with good mentoring and training programs is also good review processes. So you mentioned how you have a couple reviews a year. I expect you do as well. We all have a review process of a sort. So because there's a formality to that process, while somebody may be able to slip through for a review or two, they're not going to hang around that long. You know, if you're prepared to think about what the end goal is, which is meeting the client's objective, and you accept that you're doing it as part of a team for the firm, and you're prepared to do it with graciousness, that person will be gone pretty quickly. So you might have to live with it for a month or two, but you're not going to have to live with it for a year or two.
That is quite true, because if you're not pulling your weight, then you're definitely going to be fired. We just had a recent situation, so I can tell you for a fact.
Being that Bay Street is just this culture of greed and money, and you want to go there to make a big buck and just leave. And you got other people who just do it as an area where you can expand and grow, like career-wise, right? So you look at the culture, and a lot of people just draw parallels to like Wall Street, and that, you know, whatever it may be, you know, no offense, so for like corporate lawyers or investment bankers, all they want to do is just build as much as they can, make money, and just kind of relax and Like that.
You talked about two cultures. Both are there. Absolutely, both are there. So, you've had this impression of both, and both are true. There are some people, some of my own colleagues, who, you know, their focus is on how many hours can we bill, and this is good for us, and their focus isn't as much on what's good for the client. I mean, they're doing a great job for the client, but it's more about the process than the result. To me, and for, I think, the people who do best in the long term, it's about focusing on what's the result we're trying to accomplish. The fact that there's a fair bit of money there because of, you know, stress and effort and creative thinking and all the rest, that's the result. That needs to be the result. So I would say that both cultures are there, and within the same organization. Everybody's still an individual, and so what motivates each individual is going to be a little bit different. I'd like to think that more people are motivated by trying to accomplish our various clients' objectives, but there's some who are there for their result, and both are true, at least in my experience.
So I can't speak to being the greed and all that wonderful stuff. For me, it's about just climbing the corporate ladder and ensure that I meet my customers' needs. So just as Randy said, that you do have both cultures down there. Try not to, my thing would be try not to get caught up into it, because what happens is that there's a stigma that's there, and people will put themselves in situations where it's so demanding that you put yourself in a situation where it's not comfortable anymore. But because of the whole stigma of being in Bay Street and this financial district, you're trying to keep up and you can't keep up because it's not there anymore, and the facilities, the financial resources are not available to you, but you're still pushing yourself more and more just to be in this whole stigma of being right here in the financial industry. So it's always good to focus more on what you want as an individual and not what the general consensus is, because you will get caught up in the wrong avenue if you're looking at this person, for instance, or that person, for instance. It's about you as a person and what you want, because we all have different stories. We all have different lives to lead, and it all comes down to the individual at the end of the day, to be honest, just as Randy said.
I think I wouldn't disagree with that culture being there, but just to counter it to some degree, there is also there's a culture of, I don't know if excellence is the right word, it sounds too haughty, but you can't get, especially as a lawyer, you can't get this kind of a high quality legal experience anywhere else. I can't get this kind of an experience. The level of high quality mentoring that I get, the type of files and the complex work that I'm doing, the type of assistance that I get, you know, from document management to IT and all of these support systems that are built in. And similarly for Yolande, like the comparison between working as a financial services representative at a bank on Bay Street versus your home branch in Mississauga. I'll give you an example. If you're thinking about investing, go to your Mississauga financial services representative of CIBC or whatever bank, talk to them, and then make an appointment with one on Bay Street, and you'll see the difference. Like, these people know their stuff. So there is that culture as well. And a lot of people, especially at my stage, in the junior years, it's sort of starting very high. And from here, my doors open up to do a lot of different other things if I don't stay on Bay Street, I can do a lot of other things. I'm sure greed plays a part of it later on down the line once you start looking at profits. But it's a great place to start your career because a lot of doors open, and the type of training and experience you get, you definitely can't get anywhere else in business.
Great point. Thank you. Do you have a question? Go ahead. To the mic, please.
At the end of the day, we're all individuals. So even though we're here and we're right where you are at one point, so there's really no intimidation. For me personally, it's really just the individual. You just have to be yourself. Like, seeing people come into the branch, meaning at the core level, starting in with the branch, they're always so nervous and, oh my God, I don't know if I'm gonna get everything right. And I always say to them, just try to grasp each thing as you go on each day. There are millions of stuff for you to learn, and you're not gonna learn it all in one go. You're not gonna start today and, oh, I learned everything. No. In banking, in the financial industry, things are changing constantly. For us, we have constant learning that we're doing all the time. So you're never ever gonna be able to know everything all at once. You will never learn everything all at once. And you can't allow yourself to be intimidated. You have to at all times show confidence, because when you go for an interview, that's what the employer is going to be looking at. They're looking at that confidence that you're protruding. You have to be able to say, okay, I'm the one that is fit for this job. I'm the one that is actually going to be able to excel in this role. So you have to give that whole perception when you go to sit in front of them, look them in the eye and let them know, okay, I can hold my own. So intimidation is not going to get you anywhere, basically, if you want to pursue a career in Bay Street or wherever else. You actually have to be able to know yourself and say, this is what I want to do. Yeah.
So there's a few things that I have thought about over my career that sound like platitudes, but I still live by them. One is, you talked earlier about it's serious work, and it really is serious work, and there's a lot of money involved, and there's a lot of people involved. But what you have to do is you have to think about the fact that you got to take it seriously, but not yourself seriously. Because when you come across those people who feel like they intimidate you, they're taking themselves seriously, and that's not appropriate. What they're doing is important, but they're not necessarily any more important than anybody else. I worked at a firm, one of the founders, my first law job, I became a partner at a firm called Davies Ward and Beck. And the way I always try to remind myself is David Ward, one of the guys who founded the firm, he's more important to the firm than I am, but he's not more important to the world than I am. And the same thing holds true with every single one of those Osgood students, every single one of the bank chairs. I remember one time I was fortunate enough to go, I was a borrower, very large borrower from the Royal Bank, and we were at a ski event, and none of the bank people would sit with the chairman of the bank. And I thought, well, they're all intimidated by him, which is silly. I'm a borrower. I'm just going to go sit with the chair of the bank, and we got chit-chatting about whatever. And I was silly, and he remembered that. The other thing that that has been to me really important, you talked about it a moment ago, you're not going to know everything. The best thing I've been able to do in the last 25, 30 years since I started working is show my humanity, show that I don't know everything, admit that I don't know everything, tell people the things I'm really bad at. There's a lot of things I'm really bad at. Well, it allows people to say, he's just a guy. Geez, I'd like to help him on those things he's really bad at. Make mistakes. Because if you're not making mistakes, you're not trying that hard enough. I sometimes said when I owned the businesses I owned that business is not about perfection. It's about getting more things right than wrong. For me, I always described it that a good business gets 55% of the things right. A great business gets 60% of it right. But that means it gets 40% of it wrong. It's okay to be wrong. And it's okay to say, this is what I think. I don't have all the facts. I don't know all the issues, but this is what I think. Because when people don't see you as a machine, they can then say, oh, here's where I think this, Marie, was it? Is that your,
yeah.
This is where I think Marie fits. She could do a really good job here because she said she's really good at this and said she's not so good at that. These people who take themselves seriously, who cares? Like, I mean, I know it's easy to say, it's easy for me to say, but seriously, who cares? What they're doing is important, they're not important. You know, and unless they're doing it because they want to do it, all this other stuff that fits around it, you know, try not to worry about it. It's hard not to, but try not to.
I was just going to add to that. I think there's also, we don't get necessarily trained, but there's a self-selection sort of, you mentioned Osgood, just in going to Osgood and doing all these kind of things where you learn how to talk in a certain way, which is very intimidating to other people, like you mentioned right now. Like I still am one of the shyest people I know. I'm very reserved, but through this training of, you know, this is basically the culture of Bay Street and, you know, how people talk on Bay Street and how business is done and, you know, how people negotiate and so on, you sort of learn a way to talk. So if you can realize that that's just what it is. It's just when you listen to people and they use all these words you've never heard, and you know they can pick up your name and respond to it because we're trained to, you know, sort of listen to everyone's name and remember it, whereas usually you don't remember someone's name a lot of times, right? And those kind of things make people look very smart and it intimidates the other person. So it's also part of training and becoming good at. It's one of the skills you could learn in terms of what Jamie, I think, asked earlier about. You know, what skills would make you stand out when you're networking. It's, you know, how these people talk is sort of intimidating but also impressive to most people.
I think, I just want to jump in here, you didn't ask me the question, but I think what you had said is just doing the research. You know, the more you know about, if you're going up to somebody and you're going to talk to them, the more you know about their business and what they do, the more prepared you'll be in a conversation with them. And I think what Randy said earlier is you know, the more you put yourself out there and the more you talk to these people, you'll realize, you know, they look intimidating, but when you're talking to them, they are your people. The more practice. So I think practice talking to people, practice, you know, do your research so that some of that intimidation is gone when you realize that you know about their business and they're interested and excited that you know about their business. So that's my two cents. But okay, we're gonna take our last question and then we're gonna break for networking. Did you wanna ask something? No, okay. Any more? One more question.
Hi, my name is Beijing. I want to ask, just Randy mentioned how we can network from a volunteer in the company we are interested in, but I heard a saying, the employer is concerned about the law. If they hire, but not giving the salaries, you know, against the law. So I really want to do the volunteer, but I don't know how can I start, and who am I going to talk to in the company, for example, CIBC Security Incorporated. So how can I avoid the problem and get a volunteer opportunity?
So the volunteering that I was mentioning is not so much with a particular employer, but with the industry that that employer's in. So every significant Bay Street company would be part of a particular trade association. And where I was suggesting, because you wouldn't know whether CIBC or Royal or BMO or any of the other particular banks is best for you, but there may be some banker association events that may be relevant where you have an opportunity to volunteer. Sometimes it's as easy as, you know, being at the desk at the front and introducing yourself to people and that sort of thing. But every trade association, there's lots of volunteer opportunities, and they're not worried in the trade association about employer liability type issues. Not because they don't need to be, they do too, but because they are volunteer-based organizations, and so there's opportunities to volunteer with them. I wasn't thinking specifically about volunteering to work for a particular employer. That wasn't what I meant.
Find the volunteer opportunities.
So what you want to do is, if you're interested in a particular sector, is research what are the trade associations that relate to that sector, and then research by connecting with those trade associations, you can learn about events that they hold where they need some help. Or you can learn about certain, there might be a research opportunity. Many of these trade associations write white papers around issues that affect their industry sector. They need help, just like professors here need help in researching various aspects of the issues they're writing about. So there's lots of opportunities. I can't name them all, but there's lots of different types of opportunities where you could work with a trade association in a sector you're interested in, where you can learn more about the sector to see if it really is for you, learn more about who are the key members of that sector, I don't mean individuals, but companies, and then through working with the association, you have an opportunity to get to know, oftentimes, some of the membership. And that's a great chance at an early stage of your career to start putting yourself out there.
So, and we, at the Career Center, we can help
absolutely
you also identify some of those volunteer opportunities and organizations.
For sure.
There's also, just one more, just to add on to what Randy said, there's a lot of the firms, so like the Deloitte's, EY, KPMG's, or even banks, I guess, they do volunteer days. So say if KPMG or Deloitte has to, you know, for their corporate social responsibility stuff, CSR, they go volunteer at a food bank or go to a food drive or some kind of toy drive or winter jacket drive. They usually do that. So they move away from the office and they'll go to like a mall. Or because I also sit on a food bank board, and we get requests on a regular basis from big corporations saying we want an opportunity to come and do X or do Y. So if you're connected with volunteer organizations like a food bank, like Daily Bread, United Way, if you're volunteering with them, you're kind of here. And this goes back to what Jamie's question was: networking and knowing where these people who work at these companies are volunteering, and then you know, find possible synergies and opportunities to rub shoulders with people that work on Bay Street. So you'll never be able to work volunteer at a bank. I think that's almost unheard of. It's where those people are volunteering or spending their time outside of the office that you want to go and put yourself in those positions.
And I think you can also just visit the website. If you visit like CIBC websites, at times we do have the CIBC Run for the Cure.
Yeah.
So these things are, they're always out there. So you can always find the information It's just a matter of just visiting the websites, the various websites, whatever it is that you're interested in. You simply visit the website, see what it is that they have coming up, and try to apply yourself. But the volunteer opportunities are definitely there. This is, of course, the Career Center. You can always go there. They can always point you in the right direction and help you from there, too.
Okay, so thank you so much for those wonderful questions. Some of the key themes that I heard today, and we heard some really great information. In terms of the culture of Bay Street, it seems to be there's a real cultural excellence we heard. Working on Bay Street can really open doors for you, because mm-hmm. once you work there, it seems like there are opportunities, many opportunities could become available. But you really have to want to be there, because it sounds like the money and the amount of work that you have to do and the hours you have to put in will not help you, isn't enough to create a career of longevity there. You really have to love what you do for it to last, for yourself to last there. I also heard in terms of careers, you know, timing is important, risk taking is important, putting yourself in places to be available to opportunities and chance. And high stress, networking is key. You know, make yourself available for opportunities now. Figure out what it is that you love and what you're good at, and practice and put yourself out there. So those are some of the key themes that I heard. I hope that you got what you were looking for from today's event. I know I learned some new things today. I thought the business cards were over, but now that Randy said that, I'm gonna go print some more of mine. So. I wanted to once again thank the panelists for coming out today. I know how busy you all are, and we appreciate you giving the time back to us here at York. So please join me in thanking them for this.